Intervju Radija Študent.
Že pred dvema tednoma smo v istem terminu predvajali intervju, katerega tematika se je dotikala Haitija. Takrat je bila v pogovoru z Antonijem Buxom v ospredju haitijska revolucija in razvoj dokaj turbulentne politike v tej karibski državi. Danes lahko prisluhnete intervjuju z Alexom Dupuijem, profesorjem sociologije iz ameriške univerze Wesleyan, ki se ukvarja s politiko in širšimi družbenimi razmerami v karibskih državah, še posebej s Haitijem. Pogovor smo začeli z vprašanjem, ki se tiče 90-ih let prejšnjega stoletja, ko je bil v prvih demokratičnih volitvah na Haitiju z več kot dvotretinsko večino izvoljen Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Za Haiti so omenjene volitve veljale za skoraj revolucionarne, saj je Aristide napovedoval velike družbene spremembe, seveda v korist plebsa. Do korenitih reform ni nikdar prišlo, tudi zaradi državnega udara, ki ga je že zelo kmalu po inauguraciji izvedla haitska vojska. Dupuija smo tako najprej vprašali, kakšne so bile Aristidove politične namere in zakaj jih ni bil sposoben izpeljati.
So maybe we could start with Mr. Aristide, his election in 1990s, if I'm right. He was elected with more than two-thirds of votes. Then he was soon removed with a military cup. As I know, he tried to implement some social programs for majority of Haitian people. Why do you think that that he was not managed to stay on power? And also, I would like to know what was the program he was trying to implement in Haitian policy.
Well, it's a bit complicated. He came to power on the basis of a mass movement for democracy after 30 years of dictatorship. And he was a radical priest at the time. He was a proponent of liberation theology and advocated fairly radical change to redistribute wealth and income for the majority of the population, and to advance social programs like healthcare and education, to raise the minimum wage, and there was also a plan to support Haitian agriculture and small industries and so on. But what really scared off, if you will, the Haitian elite, the business class, and the foreign supporters of the business class and foreign supporters of the dictatorship, namely the United States and France and Canada, was mostly his radical views on at the time. He was extremely critical of capitalism and also of the IMF and the World Bank and so on. So he came with a a perception that he was very radical. He also wanted to move to transform the Haitian army, which historically has been the perpetrators of coup d'etats against governments. And he wanted to place the military under police, under a civilian jurisdiction, under the and so all those major radical changes that he at least in his speeches and his writings proposed were seen as threatening to the interests of the Haitian elite and of foreign powers like the United States and France. So, and also the Vatican was strongly opposed to him because of his radical preachings of liberation theology. So when he came to power, it wasn't the program of government that his prime minister presented to parliament was far less radical than the rhetoric that Aristide had espoused during the electoral campaign that led to his election, as you mentioned, with more than two-thirds of the popular vote. And he tried to reconcile his radical rhetoric with the need for the Haitian business class to invest in the economy. And so he then began to vacillate between accommodating the Haitian elite and the foreign aid donors, principally the United States, and even began to deal with the IMF and the World Bank, and not necessarily trying to push through the radical approach that he had been preaching during the electoral campaign. So there was a sort of an emerging contradictory sort of stance between the rhetoric of the political campaign and the assumption of, you know, when he assumed office, he was now faced with the responsibility of governing and began to try to then reconcile the Haitian bourgeoisie. But he didn't last very long. His first term was only 9 months because when in fact he moved to reform the military, the old guard of the military plotted a coup against him, and well, of course, with the support of foreign powers, and overthrew Aristide 9 months after he assumed office. He was also confrontational with the opposition parties in parliament, and he began because of the, on the one hand, preaching a radical rhetoric, encouraging the mass movement even while he was in office, encouraging popular mobilization on the one hand, and attacking the bourgeoisie. On the other hand, he was trying to appease the bourgeoisie and appease the foreign aid donors, appease the IMF. And he tried to push through a minimum wage change, especially in the assembly, export assembly industries, which was the mainstay of the Haitian economy at the time. So all these contradictory positions made him seen as someone with whom the foreign community could not rely on and could not deal with, that he was not reliable, that one didn't really know where he stood on things. So anyway, 9 months later, he was overthrown. And there is a massive wave of repression that followed. The supporters of the popular movement were crushed by the military. Many went into exile, and there was a wave of significant repression unleashed on the country by the military, and Aristide was exiled. He was first exiled to Venezuela, and then he went to the United States. And the then Bush administration, the Senior, George Bush, the father of the son who also became president, he was in power at the time, and he tried to push a reconciliation, basically a compromise where Aristide would allow the coup makers to cohabit with him in forming a new sort of government. And Aristide refused to do that as when he was in exile. And what ultimately brought the crisis to a head, especially for the United States, was that the Haitian refugees were beginning to flee in large numbers to the United States. And the flow of refugees from Haiti to the United States was something that the United States did not want to simply allow to happen. So when in 1992 President Clinton, Bill Clinton, became elected, he decided that it was time for the military junta to be removed from power. And he brokered a deal with Aristide where they would return Aristide to power, but as long as Aristide agreed to implement the policies that the United States, the World Bank, the IMF had devised for the Haitian government, otherwise known as the neoliberal structural adjustment policies that have been the mainstay of U.S. and IMF and World Bank policy globally. So in return, as a quid pro quo for his return to Haiti in 1994, Aristide then agreed to basically abandon the popular positions that he had when he was first elected and move to implement as much as possible the policies that he had agreed to in response to his return to Haiti to power by President Clinton, which Clinton did. When he returned to power, therefore, Aristide had basically, for all practical purposes, broken with the radical posture that he had before, and became much more compliant, much more agreeable to the foreign community. His first term in office ended in 1995. There were elections held in Haiti, and in 1996, his former prime minister Préval became president and assumed the presidency. And Aristide would be reelected for his second and final term in 2000, and assumed office in 2001. And again, the Haitian bourgeoisie did not want to accept his election. And by that time, many of the political parties or political groups who had formed an alliance with him in 1991 to join his mass movement and the political organization that he had created, the Lavalas Political Party, many of those groups broke with Aristide in 1996 and became part of the opposition against him. So when he was reelected in 2000 and assumed office in 2001, he no longer had the sort of middle-class intellectual support that he had in 1991. And many of those groups now moved to oppose his second term. And again, Aristide ruled during the second term pretty much as a... he had formed his own party, the Lavalas Political Party at the time, but it was a party that was now strongly opposed by other political organizations that were once allied with him. So these opposition groups joined with the Haitian elite and the United States to again force Aristide out of power in 2004 when he was once again exiled to South Africa. And the governments who came to power after that time were very compliant to the United States, were agreeable to all the demands of the IMF and the World Bank. And this is pretty much has been the norm up to now. That is, when Aristide was overthrown, there was an interim government that replaced him that was put in place by the international community, by the French, the U.S., and the Canadians. And that government organized elections that led to Préval being reelected again in 2006, and subsequent elections in 2011 that led to the election of Michel Martelly, who is now the president of Haiti. And from that point on, from the time that Aristide was overthrown in 2004, up to now, there hasn't really been much change in terms of the policies that Haiti has been following, both domestically and internationally, in terms of international policy towards Haiti, basically agreeing to the free trade neoliberal policies that have been put in place by the World Bank and the IMF, even when Aristide was in his first term, but which he at that time resisted. But since his return in 1994, there hasn't been much of any significant change in how business is being conducted and the policies that Haiti is following, at least in terms of foreign investments and the privatization of public-owned industries and very low tariffs on imports, to the point where Haiti, which once was self-sufficient in food production, especially in rice production, where it produced all the rice that it consumed. Rice is a main staple crop of Haiti. And now Haiti has become the third largest importer of U.S. rice in the world. So these policies had their desired effects. They made Haiti into an importer of food, rather than a producer of its own food.
Depuis konča s tem, da se je Haiti po koncu Aristidovega političnega udejstvovanja znašel pod še večjim vplivom Združenih držav Amerike in njihove ekonomske politike. Ledine so bile sicer orane že dolgo pred tem, zelo očitno v 70-ih letih 20. Stoletja pod vladavino diktatorja Duvalieja. Več o tem času in tudi o uporih haitskih množic in progresivnih političnih skupin po koncu Aristidovega predsedniškega mandata ter o združevanju Haitija z južnoameriškimi državami lahko slišite po glasbenem predahu.
Quando você for convidado pra subir no adro da fundação Casa de Jorge Amado Pra ver do alto a fila de soldados quase todos pretos Dando porrada na nuca de malandros pretos De ladrões mulatos E outros quase brancos tratados como pretos Só pra mostrar aos outros quase pretos E são quase todos pretos Como é que pretos, pobres e mulatos E quase brancos, quase pretos De tão pobres são tratados E não importa se olhos do mundo inteiro Possam estar por um momento Voltados para o largo Onde os escravos eram castigados E hoje um batuque com a pureza de meninos uniformizados De escola secundária em dia de parada E a grandeza épica de um povo em formação Nos atrai, nos deslumbra e estimula Não importa nada, nem o traço do soprado Nem a lente do fantástico, nem o disco de Paul Simon Ninguém... Ninguém é cidadão Se você for ver a festa do Pelô E se você não for Pense no Haiti Reze pelo Haiti É aqui O Haiti Vê se você vir um deputado em pânico Mal dissimulado Diante de qualquer, mas qualquer mesmo Qualquer, qualquer Plano de educação que pareça fácil e rápido E vá representar uma ameaça De democratização do ensino de primeiro grau E se esse mesmo deputado defender a adoção da pena capital e o venerável cardeal disser que vê tanto espírito no feto e nenhum no marginal e se ao furar o sinal, o velho sinal vermelho habitual notar um homem mijando na esquina da rua sobre um saco brilhante de lixo do Leblon E ao ouvir o silêncio sorridente de São Paulo diante da chacina ...111 presos indefesos Mas presos são quase todos pretos ou quase brancos, quase pretos de tão pobres E pobres são como podres E todos sabem como se tratam os pretos E quando você for dar uma volta no Caribe. Quando for trepar sem camisinha e apresentar sua participação inteligente no bloqueio a Cuba, pense no Haiti, reze pelo Haiti. É aqui o Haiti, não é aqui.
And this policy started, as I read, in the 70s, 80s, when IMF and World Bank started to try to make Haiti as a low-cost supplier state for other...
Correct.
Could you talk about...
Yes. The strategy to transform Haiti began, as you say, as you said, in the 70s. But during the 1970s, while they tried to push some of the free trade policies, the Duvalier regime at the time resisted those policies, especially dealing with food imports and agriculture, because Duvalier wanted to continue to subsidize and support Haitian domestic agricultural production, especially rice and other crops, because then that won him the support of the peasantry in terms of the political support that he received from the rural areas. He did, however, agree to allow assembly industries, allow investments in the assembly production, basically garment textile production, for export to the U.S., because Haiti had an abundant supply of cheap labor. And so Duvalier agreed to allow those industries to come to Haiti, but resisted until Aristide, in fact, came to power and made concessions to the foreign to the IMF and the World Bank in reducing food import tariffs and subsidies to domestic agricultural production. So, and the reason why the U.S. and the IMF went along with Duvalier is because during that time it was still the Cold War, and the United States wanted allies in the region to counter Castro in Cuba, and Duvalier threatened to play both sides. So during the Cold War, the U.S. tolerated the opposition to the full implementation of the neoliberal policies. And it wasn't until the 1990s, in fact, late 1990s, when Aristide was in power, that you began to have both the reliance on investments in the assembly industries to use Haitian labor, and the removal of all tariffs against food imports and subsidies to Haitian agriculture to allow Haiti to become a major importer of food rather than the producer of the food that he consumed. And Haiti is now still one of the primary sources for cheap labor in the Caribbean. It offers, in fact, the lowest wage in the Caribbean region for the assembly industry. And that's the policy that they've been pushing in Haiti ever since.
At this point, I would like to ask you, what about Haitian people? Okay, in the 90s, there was... Aristide, and the politics didn't work out because of the very strong power of
opposition, right?
Yes, opposition, yeah. And foreign states.
Right.
What about now? Is there many protests and demonstrations or uprising of the regular people?
Not much of that. There is some opposition. There are opposition groups. There are many peasant organizations, rural organizations, urban organizations, popular non-governmental organizations, and political groups who are opposed to the current policies of the IMF and the World Bank and the United States and so on, and would like to move towards more of a progressive left-of-center alternative. but they're not sufficiently strong or sufficiently organized nationally to really pose a major counterweight to the current government. So yes, there are opposition, there are periodic demonstrations, there are labor movements and so on, but they're not unified and they're not strong enough to pose any serious challenge to the current government. And that's largely a result of the repression that Haiti went through after Aristide was overthrown and the difficulty of rebuilding an opposition movement that is coalescent, that is, you know, that is unified and that has a unified program, and to present to the population as an alternative. So that's a problem. But there are many groups who are trying to work on creating such a larger movement, but so far they haven't succeeded in doing that.
Haiti has approximately 10 million of population, so it's a small country. It could not work at its own. It needs to have some bigger union in which it could work. In the last 10 years, Latin American left-wing presidents tried to make some little more coherent union. Does Haiti try to combine with those countries?
Well, during when Préval was elected in 2006, he established fairly good relations with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, and enter into some agreement with Venezuela, where Venezuela agreed to supply Haiti with significant amounts of petroleum, of oil, in the form of foreign aid. So that Haiti would not have to rely on the Western or U.S. and Canadian and French oil companies to supply Haiti with its oil, primarily U.S. companies, U.S. and Canadian companies. So that deal went through. But Haiti joined the ALBA, the Alliance for the Americas, and Chavez created, but is not a voting. I don't believe it has a voting membership. It joined, but it's not a full participant, as far as I remember. I may be wrong on that, but it's not part of the alliance as such. Though it participates in some of its meetings, and there is still, even though Michel Martelly is much more to the right of center than Préval was, Martelly has kept the agreement with Chavez, and Martelly is also cultivating relations with Latin America, and especially with the Caribbean Commonwealth, Caribbean Community Countries, CARICOM. But CARICOM is no longer pushing for progressive alternatives, as was the case when Michael Manley was in power in Jamaica in the 70s and 80s. So, yes, Haiti is part of CARICOM. It's a full voting member of CARICOM. It has made alliances with Venezuela and the Alliance for the Liberation of the Americas, the Bolivarian Alliance for the Americas that Chavez created, and it is making links with Argentina, with Brazil, and so on, and with Chile. But except for some of the deals with the petroleum with Venezuela, there isn't any other program that one could say is moving towards more of a social democratic alternative in Haiti. That's not happening.
So connection with Chavez is more like for interest of Haiti that he could get quite cheap oil, not...
Correct. Yeah. There is some other medical aid program. Haiti has strong relations with Cuba, for example, in terms of medical aid. Cuba provides a tremendous amount of health care aid to Haiti. It sends its doctors to Haiti to work in the rural areas. It trains Haitian doctors in Cuba. and returns them to Haiti to work. So Haiti has those strong relations with Cuba, at least in the area of healthcare. It has the relations with Venezuela in terms of energy and oil. And so there is some cooperation with Venezuela to build some power plants and so on in Haiti. But it's mostly trade deals, bilateral agreements, rather than moving to adopt the political views of Chavez and the left in opposition to the United States in the region. So Haiti is trying to play both sides, make relations with the progressive countries in Latin America, but still maintain strong relations with the United States. And so it's a sort of a difficult balancing act that's going on.
And the United States are quiet just because there are only trading relations with progressive states, huh?
Correct. That's right.
Po glasbenem premoru, ki sledi, lahko prisluhnete še zadnjemu delu intervjuja, v katerem smo se z Alexom Dupuijem pogovarjali o Haitiju po uničevalnem potresu, ki je državo stresel 12. januarja pred dvema letoma.
Você for convidado pra subir no lado da Fundação Casa de Jorge Amado Pra ver do alto a fila de soldados, quase todos pretos Dando porrada na nuca de malandros pretos De ladrões mulatos e outros quase brancos Tratados como pretos, só pra mostrar aos outros quase pretos Que são quase todos pretos e aos quase brancos pobres como pretos Como é que pretos, pobres e mulatos E quase brancos, quase pretos De tão pobres são tratados E não importa se olhos do mundo inteiro Possam estar por um momento voltados Para o largo Onde os escravos eram castigados E hoje um batuque Com a pureza de meninos uniformizados De escola secundária em dia de parada E a grandeza épica de um povo em formação Nos atrai, nos deslumbra e estimula Não importa nada Nem o traço do sobrado Nem a lente do fantástico Nem o disco de Paul Simon Ninguém é cidadão Se você for ver a festa do Pelô E se você não for Pense no Haiti Reze pelo Haiti.
O Haiti é aqui. O Haiti não é aqui.
E na TV, se você vir um deputado em pânico, maldicionado, diante de qualquer, mas qualquer mesmo, qualquer. Plano de educação que pareça fácil e rápido E vá representar uma ameaça de democratização do ensino de primeiro grau E se esse mesmo deputado defender a adoção da pena capital E o venerável cardeal se é que vê tanto espírito no feto nenhum do marginal E se ao furar o sinal, o velho sinal vermelho habitual Notar um homem mijando na esquina da rua Sobre um saco brilhante de lixo do Leblon E quando ouvir o silêncio sorridente de São Paulo Diante da chacina
onze presos indefesos, mas presos São quase todos pretos, ou quase pretos, ou quase brancos, quase pretos de tão pobres. E pobres são como podres, e todos sabem, como se tratam os pretos. E quando você for dar uma volta no Caribe, quando for trepar sem camisinha e apresentar sua participação inteligente no bloqueio a Cuba,
pense no Haiti, reze pelo Haiti.
After earthquake in Haiti came a lot of NGOs from mostly from United States, and as I read some talk about that NGOs govern Haiti. Could you talk about this? How this works?
Yes, indeed. Haiti has one of the largest presence of NGOs per capita than most other countries in the world. And the reason for this is that the policies of the World Bank, the IMF, the United States, and so on, were quite deliberate in bypassing the Haitian state, the Haitian government, in not only the supply of foreign aid, but also in the provision of services to the population. So because the Haitian state does not have, and historically never had, but now it's even less able to provide the population with basic access to healthcare, education, and so on, a lot of non-governmental organizations went to Haiti and are coming to Haiti to provide that aid to the population, but it's not obviously reaching the majority of the population because the NGOs only serve a small portion of the population in the areas where they're located. So the growth of NGOs is in direct proportion to the weakness of the Haitian government and the Haitian state in being able to provide not only healthcare and education, but access to drinking water, energy sources, and a lot of NGOs work in agricultural areas, and they received aid from the USAID to work in agricultural projects, reforestation projects, housing reconstruction, and so on. So Haiti has become, in fact, known as the Republic of the NGOs. And one of the criticisms, and which is a legitimate criticism of the NGOs, is that they're primarily used to as an outlet for their experts, their membership, to come to Haiti to do work on a temporary basis, many of whom don't know anything about Haiti. They don't know anything about the Haitian culture, Haitian history. They come for a short period of time, and when their funding or their mission is over, then they leave. But in the meantime, when they come to Haiti, they provide employment for some Haitians, but mostly for the people that they bring to Haiti, but also especially in the urban areas, increase the cost of rentals for people because they rent houses from Haitians and make it much more difficult for Haitians who don't own houses to be able to find housing to rent at reasonable costs. So while they're providing a service, there's also negative impacts that they have because the presence of NGOs then further diminishes the ability of the state to build its own capacity to respond to the needs and satisfy the needs of the majority of the population. So it's a contradictory sort of a dilemma.
Do you have any proposition how this contradiction could be resolved? Because on one side we know that Haiti needed the help, and
right,
and in the other it doesn't work.
Well, that's clear. And what seems to be what is clearly needed, in my view, is for the government of Haiti to begin to rethink policies imposed on Haiti by the international community. And we turned to a policy of subsidizing the production of domestic agriculture, support the agricultural sector because the majority of Haitians still live in the rural areas, and Haiti does have the capacity to feed itself if it receives the proper support from the government in terms of agricultural subsidies and technical support and other kinds of low interest loans to farmers and so on. And because one of the problem in Haiti is that as long as Haiti depends on importing most of the food it consumes, it drains revenues from the country rather than producing goods that are consumed by and create more sustainable economic growth in the country itself. And Haiti also now has become reliant on the remittances that Haitian immigrants send back to Haiti. In fact, remittances that Haitians send back to Haiti now are more valuable than what Haiti earns from its exports. So one of the ways that Haiti could move forward is if the government could tap into the remittances to support domestic production of small industries, agricultural production, and revitalize the economy and lessen its dependence on foreign aid and on the dictates of the multinational corporations and also on the IMF and the World Bank and the United States. So there, and obviously Haiti needs to develop, to emphasize the education of the population to create a more educated and more skilled labor force. But that requires major planning and reallocation of resources on the part of government to do that. So what basically I think needs to happen is for Haiti to begin to elect more representatives in Congress, in Parliament, who could push for these alternative policies to counteract the sort of myopic policies of the foreign community, which is allied with a very small, tiny, but very wealthy and powerful elite in Haiti, whose interests are tied with the international community, which is what Aristide tried to do when he was first elected. But Aristide did this in a way that was, if you will, too contradictory. He was not very clear. He tried to both criticize, chastise the bourgeoisie, and at the same time asking them to cooperate with him. Well, you can't do that. So I think a much more carefully thought through, progressive set of initiatives could be start to be implemented if there was a sort of a shift in the nature of parliament in Haiti to counteract, if you will, the presidency, which tends to be allied with foreign interests and so on. So, and this is what the progressive groups in Haiti are trying to do. But it's not easy to do that. But there are ideas. There are plenty of possibilities and ideas out there. That is to say, let me put it to this way. People on the ground in Haiti know what needs to be done to make Haiti a more humane, a more just society, a more equal society. And the question is now how to organize politically to bring that about.
Aleksom Dupuijem, profesorjem sociologije na Univerzi Wesleyan, se je pogovarjal Gregor. Intervju Radija Študent.